It's Ask the Expert with attorneys Charlie Cochran and Rachel Erickson on News Talk 1350 and FM 103.5 KSRO. Ask your legal questions by calling the show at 707-636-1350.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Rachel Erickson with Charlie Cochran, and I wanted to do an intro today. Charlie is here with me today, but what we're going to talk about today is some of the variety of things, cases that we have worked on and that we have managed to settle really recently. I think there's a lot of things that we do that a lot of people don't understand how varied our practice is. You probably think of us as doing car accidents and family law more recently, and insurance claims. But we do a lot of other things. So today we're going to discuss some of the settlements that we've had lately so that you can get kind of a flavor for some of the really different things that we do. We've done shows on a lot of the different areas of the law that we practice. Feel free, while we're talking about this topic today, to go ahead and give us a call down here at the station with 636-1350, 636-1350, that's in the 707 area code, and you can get some free legal advice if you'd like it on this 3rd of July. Happy 4th of July, everybody, and I hope you're ready to have a good time tomorrow and take a day off, hopefully relax with some friends and have a barbecue maybe. So what we're going to do today, let's talk about some of these cases that we have managed to resolve within the last month or two. So first of all, we had a pretty intense habitability case that both of us worked on. Charlie managed to finish it up for me. I kind of started the case. It was a habitability case here in Santa Rosa. And when I say habitability, I mean that there was a landlord that was renting out a, this one was a mobile home, and it was so not a good place to live. I mean, there were so many things wrong with the place. There were cracks in the windows, the roof leaked, the windows leaked, causing mold. The mold was so bad that it was ruining her like the insides of her pictures. It was ruining her clothes. Her kids were getting sick. Let's see, what else? The floor was uneven. Animals were crawling up underneath and dying, making it smell really bad. There had been a gas leak that wasn't fixed in a timely manner. anything else? Anything I'm missing? I mean, the list just goes on and on. There wasn't heat in every room. There's supposed to be heat in every room.
Wasn't heat. As a matter of fact, she was using her oven to heat the mobile home.
That's right. She was using her oven, and that's not how that is. And he was charging her like $1,200 a month or something rent, which was ridiculous.
Yeah. So what we were able to do is this was a habitability case. We represented the tenant, and we were able to achieve a significant settlement, $100,000 settlement for this tenant when the landlord did not abide by the habitability laws.
And she would tell the property managers, hey, this isn't working. Hey, this needs to be fixed. Hey, there's a problem here. Hey, there's a problem there. And they were not responding. And this went on for years. And she needed a big enough place for her family. And
So if you're a tenant out there, you have certain rights and you have certain responsibilities. Obviously, if you're a tenant, you have the responsibility of paying your rent on time. But also, you're entitled to habitable premises, which means that you're supposed to have a roof that doesn't leak. You have hot and cold running water. You have electricity that works. You have plumbing that works. You have the right not to be have rodents infested in your property.
Or cockroaches.
Yeah.
Vermin in general.
Vermin in general. And the thing is, you have rights as a tenant.
And so your window should not be broken. You should not be having mold infestations. I mean, within reason. The mold thing, you know, you can keep your place clean yourself. But if it keeps coming back, there may be a bigger problem and you need to get your landlord involved. And you need to have screens on your windows. You have have to be able to have, you know, ingress and egress, which means you have to be able to get in and out of your house in a safe manner, which means your steps have to be safe. There has to be a railing on your steps if it's more than one step. There's all these different rules. You have to have a way, more than one way, to get out of the house for safety reasons. I mean, the list goes on and on. And if you're a landlord, you know, and you need to know what to do, please hire us so we can explain to you what you have to do so that you don't end up getting sued.
I would say I've represented most of the property managers here in town. And a lot of times, Rachel, it's the tenant that is causing the problem. I've had situations where the tenants are operating a commercial business out of the rental. For example, they're, you know, the taco truck kind of thing. They're actually cooking all their food in the rental house, and then there's the thing where they don't properly disperse their garbage, and they cause the cockroach mice kind of problem themselves.
That can absolutely happen. So tenants, you do have responsibilities to keep the home clean. You can't go cooking meth in there. You know, you can't have illegal weed grow in there. You know, these things happen. So landlords, tenants, you both have rights and responsibilities. But we were able to settle that case very well for her. And she's able to move on to bigger and better places to live because of that.
That's right.
We had a traumatic brain injury case, which, as you know, is one of my pet subjects that I've been studying for years, and the law on that has changed greatly.
Now, in this case, the fact pattern is that you had a real estate broker that's actually stopped to make a phone call, to make a cell phone call. We always encourage everybody to pull off the road in order to make a cell phone call. And so he did exactly what he was supposed to do. He pulled entirely off the road. He's sitting there in his truck making a cell phone call, and somebody just plows into the back of him, you know, going 45 miles an hour. And he loses consciousness. And, well, that's by definition, Rachel, a mild traumatic brain injury.
That's a concussion, which is by definition a closed head injury. A concussion is a head injury. So yeah, if you lose consciousness, by definition you've had a head injury. And then the question always becomes, does it resolve very quickly? Because most of the time it will resolve within a week or two at most, but sometimes it lasts longer and sometimes it doesn't ever go away. Very rarely.
But yeah, but we do have that, what we call the miserable minority. That's about 18 to 20%, that it never goes away.
5 to 20%. But yeah, there's 5 to 20% that it never goes away. And we've had a couple of those cases. And what that's talking about is post-concussive symptoms that don't go away. And I'm not going to bother listing them all here right now, but we're very able to deal with those from the legal angle.
So we settled that case. And as a matter of fact, we settled that case with the primary insurance carrier. And then we're going to go after his own policy, which is an underinsured motorist policy.
Which we're going to give that plug that we always give about, you know, once a month, which is, if you don't have underinsured motorist coverage and if you don't have medical payments coverage, go get it. They're cheap and you need it. There are too many people out there that are uninsured or don't have enough insurance to cover you. So, and these are very inexpensive policies to carry. So go talk to your agent, or if you need to call them up, you know, if you don't have an agent.
The vast majority of people are driving around underinsured, and there's about 11% of the people driving around on the road that are not insured at all.
And it's the same coverage. Uninsured and underinsured is the same coverage, so you're not paying extra for two different things. So call your agent, call your insurance company, see what it costs. Trust me, it will be the most valuable thing you ever did. Okay, so then we were talking briefly about underinsured motorist coverage. What is underinsured motorist coverage? And we've had a couple of those cases lately, Charlie.
Yeah, we've settled a couple of those cases recently where you go after the at-fault driver, and the at-fault driver will have insurance, let's say $15,000 or $25,000. And that's the first person you settle with is the at-fault driver. Then after you settle with the at-fault driver, you turn around and make a claim against your own insurance company's uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. Now that's going to be an arbitration. It's not going to be a jury trial. It's going to be an arbitration, and it's an arbitration that the insurance company and the insured select an independent arbitrator, and that arbitrator makes a decision.
And it's an arbitration because you have a contract with your insurance carrier. You pay them money, they insure you. That's a contract. And within that contract that you have, there will be a clause that says if we don't agree on any sort of thing, that any disputes that we have, that will go to arbitration, not jury trial. So it's out of a contract. So they have the highest duty of good faith and fair dealing, which means that they have to try to deal fairly with you, and that there's a whole body of law that covers that. And so we deal with that as well. And Guy Kornblum, our partner, is an expert witness in a lot of those kind of cases throughout the state and throughout the country as well.
And I might give a plug. Guy and I are the featured, we've done the featured article in this month's California Consumer Attorneys magazine on dealing with bad faith,
which is when your insurance company doesn't do what they're supposed to do. And that applies in these uninsured and underinsured motorist cases because you're dealing with your own contract. So it's more personal.
So we're talking today about the cases that we've recently settled in the last month or so.
Feel free to give us a call down here at the station at 636-1350, and we'll give you some free legal advice. It doesn't have to be on any particular topic. Just if you have a legal question that you want answered, feel free to give us a call. Or you can give us a call down at the office at 544-9006, 544-9006. You can also find us online, and we have a contact now, and you can hit that and send us an email, and we can give you a call back or contact you by email. Either way, we're happy to help you whenever we can.
KCEHlaw.com. KCEHlaw.com.
Yeah, but if you Google our names, you'll come up with us anyway. Yeah. I mean, it's not hard to find us. Charlie Cochran, Rachel Erickson, you'll find us. Trust me, we're easy to find. Okay, so we are talking today about some of the cases that we've worked on recently. And we talked about a habitability case that we resolved, a brain injury case that we've resolved, and we did some discussion of underinsured motorist and uninsured motorist coverage in the auto accident concept. So now we're going to talk about a wrongful termination case that we had. We had a nurse who was fired. Now, Charlie, tell us all about that case.
Yeah, we had a nurse that was, we believe, wrongfully terminated from a local hospital here. And I'm not going to say which hospital, but you know who you are. So anyway, she was wrongfully terminated, and we reached a monetary settlement of $30,000. But that really isn't the big part of this.
No, it wasn't a financial thing.
The big part of this is that they won't disparage her anymore. They won't say she was a bad nurse or that she's not hireable again or anything like that.
Well, you have to explain to our listeners what happened. I mean, she was fired for what? And what were they disparaging her? Why are we here?
She did get fired because she made a minor medical mistake. But the thing is, though, after she was terminated, she would apply to other hospitals, and they would call and ask, is she a good nurse? And unfortunately, this hospital would say no. And so she was being what we call disparaged around town.
People were talking smack about her.
Right. And so
she really was, she wasn't a bad nurse. She just made one rather minor mistake. Is that right?
That's right.
And that, you know, those things happen occasionally. Now, if it's a major mistake, you should be fired. But for a minor issue, and when we took in the case, we felt that this was unjustified behavior. Now, if you're going to come to us and say, well, yeah, I gave the patient the wrong insulin and they went into some sort of shock and died. Well, you know what? You probably should have been fired. So.
Yeah, but the key is that most employment lawyers will tell you, once somebody's terminated, you shouldn't say anything but the term of their employment, the position they held, and the fact that they did, in fact, work there. You shouldn't give opinions about whether they were a good or bad employee. And so the bottom line is we were able to reach a favorable settlement, but we were also able to negotiate the anti-disparagement clause in the contract.
So now she will be able to go off and get another job, and she has the most adorable baby, and her family will be able to be taken care of. So yeah. That was, for us, even though we didn't, you know, make a lot of money off of this, for us it was, you know, we rarely do the thing where we go, well, it really is just the principle of the matter, but in this case it kind of was.
Right. So that's employment law. So far we've talked about, we do habitability law, we've done a mild traumatic brain injury, we've done underinsured motorist claims. We just talked about a wrongful termination case. And folks, these are cases we've settled in the last month. I mean, we settled a...
And then we have an employment case. So tell us about the employment case.
Sure. This was a nurse that worked at another hospital, and she was... they charged her with failing to make her rounds. And so we were able to get a monetary settlement for her wrongful termination.
Did she fail to make her rounds?
She says she didn't. She says she's not on the videotape because she was actually in a position where she wouldn't be caught on the videotape. And she said she was making her rounds, and we were able to get people that worked with her that said she did make her rounds.
We were able to prove that she did make her rounds, and so they fired her, and then what happened?
Then we wrote letters to her former employer, and we eventually reached a monetary settlement.
And, you know, just to put in another, on the other side of that, I have another case where I have a an employer who's being sued by an employee for wrongful termination. And on the employer's side, I feel like they were completely justified in terminating this employee. And they're claiming that she was disabled and that they didn't accommodate her and all these things. And I just, you know, I'm defending this employer just to the nth degree, because I think it's just a really wrong thing that what's going on here. So so that's another, you know, a couple of different employment cases.
So we've represented the employee and the employer in employment cases.
We do. We do both of those. And then we have a medical malpractice case that we just resolved last Thursday.
Yeah, this was a case where, I mean, it's the biggest case in my career. And I got to tell you that I'm really happy that we've been able to reach a settlement in this case, because this poor lady went in several times to the emergency room complaining of neck and back pain and then also a fever. Now, that's key. A fever, and they gave her anti-fever medication, and the fever even went up higher. So she went in three times. They didn't do any kind of MRI of the spine, and she ended up with a spinal abscess, and that was confirmed later on an MRI. And even once they confirmed the spinal abscess, they took over 40 hours to get her to surgery. So it was clear medical malpractice. We're very happy we were able to get for her a very favorable settlement. And And that's another type of case we handle. We handle medical malpractice. We handle automobile accidents, dog bites, habitability cases, cases involving landlords and tenants. Rachel's taking on divorce cases now. Rachel, just mention just briefly how you're taking that.
Well, it's been really interesting. Family law is just a really interesting area of the law to practice in. And I have a wide variety of issues. I have some child custody issues that we really try to resolve those as amicably as possible. And luckily, I do have to say that the law has moved a lot more towards sharing joint custody, sharing equal custody as much as possible, trying to make things as pleasant for the family and the children as possible. And it's always, you know, what the courts are looking for there is what is in the best interest of the children. So unless you have a parent that really isn't doing their job, you'll have some pretty fair deals with custody, and you can usually work those out. A lot of what I'm dealing with is primary home and trying to resolve how that gets divided. And it's I did a radio show on the Moore Marsden calculation, which is you have I have a couple of cases where the husband owned the house before marriage. It's his separate property. They go into they get married. They're married for a while. They get a divorce, and so the wife wants her interest in his separate property, and she's entitled to an interest in that separate property. It's just figuring out what that interest is and whether they did improvements on the home, because that, you know, and out of whose money. And so a lot of it is looking at whose money was put where. And
what I really think is important for us to say here when we're talking about your approach to divorce that I've noticed about you, Rachel, is you go into the conflict really with an attitude is how can we resolve this conflict? How can we get this done?
Efficiently.
Yeah.
I'm all about efficiency, because otherwise you're going to pay more in attorney's fees than your property is worth, and you're going to go broke really fast. And that is not my goal, to break you. My goal is to see how can we get this done quickly and efficiently. That can't always be done, and I understand that. And if that's true, then, you know, I'll be there for the long haul if I have to. But I really try to look at what the assets are, you know, who's got what kind of funds, and go, okay, no matter what you have, even if you have like a ton of money, how can we get this done quickly and efficiently so that you're not paying me more than you need to? Because that happens way too often. And especially if you're, you know, you don't have a lot of extra money, you don't want to be spending it all on attorney's fees. That's ridiculous. I would figure put it towards settling the case rather than paying me. So that's my approach. I do charge for an initial consultation. Some lawyers don't, but most do. And my reason for doing that really is just so that I can establish a good faith paying relationship right out the door, because otherwise, especially in family law, you can work for free all the time. I could really easily just work for free full time. I could work, you know, 7 days of 24/7, I could work for free in family life.
I've noticed, though, that when you do an initial consultation, you're visiting with the person for at least an hour, maybe even 2 hours.
Usually it ends up being about an hour and a half, and sometimes 2 hours, depending on the complexity of the issues. And I just charge $200, so it's an excellent value to at least, you know, get some advice. I'm also really, really willing to help somebody through their own divorce, and I just tell you what you need to do, and then you go and do it. I'm really open to that, so that you don't have to pay me for filling out forms that you can fill out yourself. And I do have one client in particular who has spent, gosh, at least $40,000 in attorney's fees before she came to me. And I'm telling her, here's how we're going to, you know, nip this in the bud. And here's what you need to do. And you go do this and this and this and this, and then come back to me. I'll review it. And then we'll decide what, you know, and I'll fix whatever needs to be fixed. And I'll be at the hearings for you. And so that works out really well for me, and works really well for some of the clients. If you're, you know, reasonably intelligent, you can get your way through a divorce. Some people are just too nervous to do it themselves, so they'd prefer to hire me. So, and that's fine. And I got to tell you, one of the things I really like about family law is I've got great clients. I really like my clients. We get along great. So it's working out great for everybody so far. And we have had quite a month with so many different issues, and it's been really fun. I've been really enjoying the practice of law. I took, you know, a year sabbatical, enjoyed myself, relaxed, came at it with a new view, and I'm way enjoying myself a lot more than I was when I felt like I needed to go out. And so things are going real good.
So if you have divorce issues, really call Rachel. She's going to try to resolve it for you quickly and as efficiently as she can. Today we've been talking about the different types of law we've done in the last month, the different types of cases we've settled. And give us a call down at the office at 544-9006. Talk to you later.